Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have a very special guest today and one of the best voices in our office, Adam Chol from our office. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Yeah. I hope I'm here for more than just my voice, but I'll do my best.
Well, I'm really turned on right now by that voice.
So. I can go lower if you like.
Awesome. Well, you know, Adam, I'm just so thankful that you're on the podcast today. Adam is an Oakland realtor from our office. He's been with us for a couple of years now. So, Adam, I'd just love to hear your professional story. Like, how did you get started in real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is my first podcast, Michael, so thanks for having me. You're popping my podcast cherry, so that's fantastic. Yeah, so I moved from England in about 2008, and initially when I arrived here, I knew I wanted to be in real estate, and my goal was to, I wanted to build skyscrapers. That was what my original goal was.
Oh, wow.
But here we are now in real estate, selling real estate. 2008, I got a job with a team, mm-hmm. and I was an assistant for that team,
right.
For a few years, and I was running around doing all the, learning the bones of the business.
Right.
Then I became licensed in 2009, excuse me, and I worked for that team till 2011, and that was awesome. I learned so much during that time. Mm-hmm. 2011, left the team, moved out by myself, and since then I've been independent agent and loving it ever since.
Wow, that's great. So you knew you wanted to be an agent before you arrived. So tell me sort of maybe before you came to Vancouver, and so you're originally from...
From England, yeah, that's right. So I did university out there, went to high school out there, finished my degree and so on. I did a degree in business computing.
Okay.
So very different, not very entrepreneurial, that's for sure. I was bred to be a consultant. So I was bred to work for like the big four, you know, the Deloittes, the PwCs of the world in a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. And as part of my degree, we did a year in industry. So we worked, I actually worked for a utility firm that used to be a public utility. And it was awful. You know, it was terrible working in an organization with so much wastage. There's people just kind of sitting around waiting for retirement. And it was a real eye-opener for me that I really didn't want to be in that environment and waste my life doing that.
Right.
And even before that, I remember when I was young, my dad's an interesting character, and he doesn't really give much advice. But I remember when I was young, I was about 11 years old, and he came home one day, and he had three bits of advice, and they were all in kind of in one go, which I thought was kind of interesting because I'd never had that from him before. And he told me three things. He said, "Son, I think you should learn Mandarin." I said, "Okay, Dad. Okay, Dad. Sure. Yeah." The second thing he said is that, you know, I've heard of this thing called the World Wide Web, and he said, "I think you should buy up domain names." Remember when domain names were new? And he said, "You should, you know, buy like Coca-Cola.com and Nike.com." I'm like, "Okay, Dad, yeah, sure, whatever, yeah, fine." And he handed me a book, and it was Rich Dad, Poor Dad,
right?
Which I'm sure a lot of us have read. And he said, "I think you should read this." So I took one of the three. Yeah. So imagine if I'd done all three, we'd be sitting on my yacht right now. But, but I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I realized that I wanted to be a real estate investor, well, be an investor, and eventually move to that stage with passive income. So that's kind of the why I got involved in real estate. And then, yeah, like I said, 2008, I moved out here and took the plunge.
So why did you move to Vancouver from England?
Great question. We moved for family. So my dad's family moved out in the 70s.
Okay.
So they're out here in the suburbs, and we kind of followed them because family is super important to us, like my immediate family. So we wanted to be around them and be part of their kids growing up and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously family is so important to you, and your relationship with your parents. What's your dad and mom like? What are they like?
I've never really met anyone like my dad and my mom, which is probably an amazing thing. Yeah, they're awesome people, super supportive. They had a lot of troubles when they were growing up, when they wanted to get married. So my dad's Indian and my mom's English.
Right.
So back in the day, they had a lot of trouble when they were getting together as a couple. So they're very easygoing people and very supportive people. So I'm quite lucky in that respect.
Yeah. Did they face a lot of prejudice, or did they face a lot of...
Oh yeah, for sure. My mom tells a story of when my dad talked to his dad, my grandpa, and said, "Hey, I'm going to marry this white lady." And my granddad threw him out of the house and said, "You know, don't come back."
Really?
I don't want to know you. So they had a very tumultuous relationship.
Right.
And even my mom too. On my mom's side, she, you know, even her family were, you know, "Oh, you're going to marry an Indian guy." Like back then, I mean, we see that today, but even back then, you can imagine in the way back in the day, it was even more amplified for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So how do you think that impacted them, and how do you think that impacted you?
I think, yeah, like I said, they don't offer like relationship advice. They don't say, you know, you shouldn't be with this person, or you should do this. They're very open to anything. They're just super supportive. And I think that, you know, I try and, you know, glean that from them as well and kind of carry that forward. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
So what did they do professionally? What were their, you know?
So my mom was a teacher.
Okay.
Until I was born, and then she gave that up. My dad used to work for Deloitte, so he used to work at the Big Four.
Oh, so he used to work at, so originally you're actually going to go down the path of
exactly,
your dad with
exactly.
consulting, and then
exactly.
you took this other path.
Yeah, he was a consultant for Deloitte in London, in the city.
Yeah.
And he used to commute. He would commute like 3 hours a day. Hours a day there, 3 hours a day back to be with us as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one day he got to Paddington Station, he got off the train. It was like 6 a.m. to tie his shoelace, and he realized he was wearing one shoelace and one buckle shoe. Like, he had two different shoes on, Michael, because
right.
he was just so exhausted. And I,
right.
and then, you know, when he told me that story, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be commuting to something that you're working so hard for somebody else. I don't want to, that's not the life I want for my family. So
right.
I kind of made the decision to shift that.
Yeah. So how much of, you know, obviously, you know, you're in this new profession and you're starting, you know, you're an entrepreneur starting your own real estate business. And
right.
you don't really have like a traditional background. You're obviously your parents working for a big consulting company and for the government as a teacher. So like, was it just that book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, that actually accelerated you to do that? Or did you always have an interest in entrepreneurship and in business?
I always had an interest in real estate, but that book really... really hit home for me in terms of being able to generate passive income. And at that time, I thought, well, if I can be involved in the real estate industry in order to buy real estate for passive income, then that's kind of what shifted it for me. But you're right, like, not having that entrepreneurial background, it does make it tricky, because you're kind of on your own in this business, right? Especially when you're starting out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much of that would you say, like, and obviously you're so close to your family, and it's such a huge impact on you, and taking that... you know, taking that shift, did they support the decision for you to be like totally independent business person, or did they think, hey, like, I think you should work at Deloitte under me, son?
it's funny. So when I was younger, I used to work at a bar, and as a lot of us did when we were younger. So I was 18 and I was living the life working in a bar, and I thought it was the best thing in the world. And I didn't actually want to go to university. I wanted to go and work at this bar, and, you know, the bar chain of bars were like, oh, you know.
Was this in England?
Yeah, this is back in England. And, you know, they were like, oh, if you work with us for 2 years, you can run your own bar. And I was like, this is great. You know, it's just talking to girls and drinking beer. I'm like, this is the life, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they really encouraged me to go to university just to kind of, you know, instill that discipline, I guess, in me.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, they've been fully supportive of,
yeah.
of whatever I want to do. So,
right.
yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, is your whole family here?
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah.
So would you say, like, you know, making yourself up of, you know, have you heard of the idea of, like, nature and nurture? Like, how much of you do you think is, like, how you were brought up, and how much of you is, like, you know, genetics?
I think your upbringing has a huge amount to do with it. And, you know, I had a pretty good upbringing. I didn't have like a huge struggle. I think it's, I think that really does affect how you're, you know, how you become, you know, an adult is,
yeah
for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's pretty surprising. Like, well, some things that I have noticed about Adam. Adam's in the office first every morning.
That's right. That's right.
And like, I don't know if that's just like your internal clock. But, you know, you're very, very hardworking. You're, you know, like, from what I know, it's just, you know, in my observations, Adam's in the office first thing in the morning. Is it just, like, your internal clock, or is it, like, you're maybe it's from your background, your dad?
Yeah, it's not my internal clock. I think the past couple of years, you know, I've reached a plateau kind of in my business where, you know, my income and the number of deals. We talk a lot about income and deals in real estate, which we'll come onto in a bit, which I absolutely hate. But, you know, I've kind of reached a plateau in my business, and I realized that I need to make a shift. And I feel when you start in real estate, people get into real estate because they think, well, I can make my own schedule. I can come to the office at midday. I can go for lunch and go to Starbucks, and it's great. And it is good. But if you're going to have that attitude or that way of running your business, you're not going to reach the next level. And I'm sure you can speak to this, Michael. So I made a shift about a year and a half ago to implement a non-negotiable morning schedule. So I'm up at 5, working out at 6. I'm in the office for 8. It's very regimented, because if I don't have that, I'd be getting up at 10 and making a couple of calls and going for lunch, right?
Right.
You have a pretty good morning schedule too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm very, very routine in the morning. I think I may have mentioned this a couple times in the pod. So, like, specifically, did you write it down in a list, or is it just kind of, like, mentally mapped in your mind?
Now it's ingrained.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, it used to be, you know, I'd set my alarm, like, 5 a.m.,
yeah.
Get up, have a coffee, go work out. But now it's more, you know, yeah. Now it's more ingrained. Yeah,
right.
For sure.
Like, what kind of workout do you do?
I do a lot of spin, so
okay.
I spin probably about
those
six
times. Big legs, you guys. This is not a video.
You can't see this, but Michael is checking out my legs.
Right. Exactly.
We'll post the video later.
Exactly.
Link by you have to pay for that link. So I do a lot of spin. So I spin probably 6 times a week, and then I do weights probably a couple times a week as well.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, good for your cardio, good for your
right.
heart, right? So
yeah, that's great. I have a pretty regimented morning routine. I've been doing it for like a long, long time, and it's really helped my business. There's a book called The Miracle Morning. Have you heard that one before, Adam?
I have. I've not read it, but yeah, I've heard of it.
So I think a lot of it, like even if you Google the summary of it, there's like 10 bullet points and stuff like that. So what it did is that it polled the top 100 Fortune 500 CEOs,
right.
And asked, and they basically did a list of what their morning routines were, and kind of really like tried to understand like the average times they were waking up, like what exactly were they doing, how many eat breakfast, how many did not eat breakfast, and tried to understand like everything about their about that morning and how it was a differentiator. So basically, what it kind of gleaned is that. You know, the morning is basically for you. Like, you know, it's like you time. Because I think for the most part, entrepreneurs, busy people, family men, family women, you know, they don't get any of their own time.
Right.
They only get time, you know, for everyone else, especially in our business, where we're a people-focused business, we're people-forward business. Basically, your whole schedule is, you know, like, it's not up to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't go to the gym at 9 a.m. because
no.
People are already calling you, and there's an expectation that your energy is focused on your clients, right? So working out at 6 a.m., I know that no one's calling me. I don't have to do emails till 7:30.
Yeah.
It's fine. What's your morning routine like, Michael? What do you do?
So, you know, for first thing, that maybe because whenever someone is like better than me at something, or whenever someone is just, I just like listen to them blindly. I don't argue, I don't debate. So basically I just like follow this exact routine of that book, which is the average CEO in those companies was waking up at 4:45
right.
Or 4:47 or something like that. So that's my daily alarm. So it's 4:47 and I don't know why.
That's an odd number, an annoyingly not round number, but maybe that's my OCD.
Exactly.
Why not 4:50?
Exactly.
Okay, 4:47.
In my alarm is 4:45.
Great.
So I wake up at 4:45. And I, you know, I spend some time, obviously I get up, I brush my teeth and do the bathroom stuff. And then by around 5 o'clock, I'm like, I have a coffee and I'm doing my to-do list. Or
right.
I read a book called Bullet Journal. Have you heard of that?
No.
So basically it's a kind of a bullet point journalizing system.
Mm-hmm.
So, everyone has different levels of memory and stuff like that, but you know, I really wanted to kind of diarize everything that I've been doing in my, you know, my professional life and also in my, you know, my personal life as well. And this just helps me to kind of keep track of what I'm doing and where I'm at, and helps me to reflect back on things. So first thing I do is I get my book out of my little purse.
Your man purse?
Yeah, my man purse. And I, you know, I write down my journal of exactly what I'm going to be doing that day. You know, my thoughts from, if I had any dreams, I like write down those.
Interesting.
And, you know, any kind of goals, any things that I have, it's all contained within this, like, this journal, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's where I start. And then I head to the gym at 6 o'clock. Or if I don't go to the gym, I have like this kettlebell that I swing around
nice.
My house. And, or I like just flex in the mirror or something. I don't know. So I'll do that, and then as soon as I do that, I basically I just head to the office. So I'm normally at the office by about 8 o'clock, something
right.
like similar to Adam. So anywhere from 7:45 to 8 o'clock in the office, and I always like to get in before everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I already have my to-do list, and so for the most part, I just kind of root around, and I like either make coffee or I clean up a bit.
Right.
I don't really like to dig into emails right away. I like to. It's weird. Like, have you ever done any visualization or anything like that?
No, and this is something that I need to get better at. Yeah, like kind of meditation and visualization stuff. No.
Yeah. So, in my office, it's kind of it looks like a shit show. Like, there's like all these weird lists on the walls. There's all these numbers that are just, you know, kind of goals, and so I'll look at those numbers and I'll just kind of visualize them like increasing.
Right.
And same things with a bunch of things at the office, you know, that we work on. So I kind of visualize good things happening through the day.
Do you have a vision board? Is that something you have?
I don't really have a vision board. My sister was really into it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm more of a list person.
Okay.
And I think, there's so many, great books and like in business and in entrepreneurship that you can read. But I really think that all the answers are actually within.
Mm-hmm.
So when you notice something, when something really stands out to you instinctually, that's when, you know, the spark happens. Mm-hmm. You got to act on those, on that intuition. Mm-hmm. Versus, I'm just going to do kind of what this other person does and try to have it work for you. Sometimes that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I have done a vision board before, but I haven't really found it was good. I think for me, I just like the lists. I like numbers,
right.
So I'm a numbers oriented person, so that really helps.
Mm-hmm.
In that,
okay.
In that regard, for me, when I, you know, for my mornings and how I track my business, which is, you know, something that I advise a lot of people to do.
Right? Yeah.
So Adam, obviously you talked about Rich Dad Poor Dad as being one of the like influential reads that you did. So what were some of the points within that book that really stood out to you?
I think the main thing is the biggest thing for me was not working for somebody else, putting your money to work for you.
Right.
So for me, it's I don't want to be working when I'm 60.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be working really when I'm 50.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be traveling. I want to have that, you know, be able to be sitting on a boat in the middle of the ocean or wherever you want to be, doing whatever you want to do and having income work for you. So that was a huge one for me, in terms of investing in things that will give you a return, whether that's a business, whether that's real estate. And for me, it was real estate.
Mm-hmm.
But just putting your money to work and gleaning that passive income, that's the biggest thing. Yeah.
So where would you, let's say I was a client and I'm like, okay, Adam, I want to invest money in real estate. Where would you point me towards?
Absolutely. Well, it's challenging in this market, as we know, because not much is cash flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the big points of the book is, you know, in terms of defining what is an asset. So there's the challenge that the book faces if the real estate investment is not putting money in your pocket every month, it's not mm-hmm. technically an asset, right? As we know. Even now somewhere out like Port Moody, I see the prices are kind of adjusting a bit. I'm going out today with a client to shop out there mm-hmm. and the rentals, you know, the rental amount's still pretty good. So with a reasonable amount down, you could still probably, you know, at least break even
right.
and start paying down that mortgage. So somewhere like that, they obviously have the SkyTrain out there. New West, mm-hmm. I think, is a great position as well. It's tough in Vancouver now, you know, like
right.
5 years ago, 10, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, we could buy a condo here for $300,000 and the rent would be, you know, 2100. So
right.
now we got to kind of look at other areas and get some better cash flow out there. So
yeah.
probably somewhere further out. Yeah.
You know, I think the public transit in Vancouver has really like shaped and changed like how people are buying investment properties. Like I've noticed even early on in my career when I first got started, if you're buying an investment property, you're only buying if you're buying an investment condo, residential property, you're essentially only buying in downtown Vancouver,
right.
like a studio or a one bed. That's mm-hmm. everyone was buying those. You didn't look at New West. You didn't look at Metrotown. You didn't look at Brentwood.
Sure.
You didn't look at the East Vancouver. You know, for the most part, you were really focused on that. And that's what I found
mm-hmm.
that my clients were really focused on that market. But now they're so open to Coquitlam and. You know, I think that whole stigma behind riding the SkyTrain is like...
Oh, of course, yeah.
That's changed. I don't know.
Absolutely. I watched a keynote by Bob Rennie. It was years and years ago, and he was...
Right.
They were talking about when they were planning the SkyTrain, and he's... The long and short of his keynote was that young people don't need a car to find a partner anymore. You know, back in the day, like, you need a nice car, like, take a girl on a date, yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, so you got a fancy car. But now, like, no, we can bike to the donut shop. I don't want to go that far. Yeah, but, you know, like, it's not a necessity to for young people to have anymore. So I think that's, you know, that's fantastic. Yeah.
What was the first car you ever had?
It's kind of embarrassing, but I had a convertible BMW.
Oh, wow. That is a fancy car.
I worked hard for that car. Of my friends were buying little, you know, like shit boxes or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, well, look, I can get this for the same money. And I worked at the bar that I was telling you about before. But yeah, it was interesting. That's for sure.
Yeah. You're a bit of a car guy, right?
Yeah, I am a little bit. Yeah.
So like, tell me about the fascination for that. Was that from a child? Is that from...
I've always loved driving fast. I've always loved that feeling of speed.
Okay.
And I like focusing on, like, I like being able to drive fast, and I like using my brain to process that kind of information. Okay. If that makes sense. And it's a huge waste of money. I've wasted so much money on cars, but I just love the form of them. I find it quite meditating too. Like, I still wash my own car. Like, yeah. I won't go to the car wash unless I have to, but like, I love spending that hour or two. I did it on the weekend. I cleaned like 3 cars in a row. It took me like 4 hours, but I like it. I like that meditative aspect of it. Right. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, it's such a waste of money.
Hey, you know what? I think every person needs a release, and they need, you know, something that, you know, that they can occupy their attention outside of work.
Right.
And, you know, for some, it's like, I actually think that's a pretty healthy, you know, other people it's drinking, some other people it's like this, and, you know, a lot of other, maybe not so positive things, but I think cars are just like, I'm not a car guy.
Right.
So if, like, let's say you were to have, like, because you're into sports cars, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, like, let's say a guy that's not into sports was like, what's the sport car you got? This is, like, the most...
It's got to be a 911 Turbo.
911 Turbo.
It's got to be a 911 Turbo. Yeah. Although I saw one in Kits the other day just outside local. It was a 1980s Carrera RS. So if you know cars, you'll know that's a beautiful car. And it's fully restored.
Right.
I gotta have that car, Mike. It was beautiful. It was immaculate, yeah. But I'd love a classic Porsche, too. Yeah. For sure. Yeah,
the 80s Porsches are a little bit more boxy.
Right.
But there's no return to that design. Is that only one era?
Yeah.
It was a pretty consistent...
It was, up until about, well, they say up until 93, anyway, we could go on, but up until 93, it was kind of like the classic, then the shape kind of changed, but they're beautiful.
So, what do you think about Tesla? What do you think about those guys,
It's funny. They seem insane. Like, your car has a ludicrous mode.
I got the one just under the ludicrous mode. Because I'm never gonna race anymore. It's not really a big deal. But it's funny because just like, you know, some people are just like, love their, like, I drive a Tesla. Some people love their Tesla, and some people like are so against it. Like, a lot of car guys I know, friends of mine, are just like, I can't believe you're driving that.
It's like a go-kart, right? It's a very fast go-kart, I'll give you that, but it's essentially a go-kart. But for you, it's just a utility, right? It's not really
for me, it's always been an A to B thing.
Right.
I didn't want to, like, stop over at the gas station anymore because, you know, I was always, like, buying chips and corn nuts there for the
moment. Can of Coke.
So, but, you know, that was, like, the main thing. And also, I'm just, like, the biggest Elon Musk fan. He's a world changer. So,
in terms of thinking big, he's phenomenal. Hey, like, just what he's doing in the world, for sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, he doesn't. It's really, and we're going to touch on this because I know Adam has a different philosophy of, you know, his motivation for real estate and how he provides advice to his clients and stuff like that. But you know, what's really interesting about Elon is he looks at a world's problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to find a solution to that problem. So he's not really interested in, like, he's interested in technology and engineering and figuring things out and all those things, but he's really interested in solving world issues.
Right.
So, you know, sustainability for fossil fuels and how it's impacting the environment. Second is global disaster, you know, like hurricanes, ice ages, all these things like that. So that's the reason why he's building a space company to actually transport human beings to Mars so that we can colonize other planets, so that, you know, if something happens to Earth, if an asteroid hits the Earth, you know, who knows what would happen if what happened with the dinosaurs happens to us. Like, we have no way out.
Right.
Like, we're just going to be the same as the dinosaurs were. So you know, he thinks about these kind of world-changing issues and he tries to like solve them in what we know now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting because, you know, we are independent thinkers, we're all individuals, but humanity is built like a bit of a hive mind where everything's on the shoulders of everyone else. So like, my girlfriend's reading this crazy book. It's called The Secret Mysteries of All Things.
Okay.
And like, there's like these world changers like Einstein or Pythagoras or, you know, all these crazy, like, you know, Benjamin Franklin, and they just like kind of accelerate and leap forward humanity.
Right.
And then everyone just sits, they learn those things in elementary school. Like the next Einstein learns those things in elementary mm-hmm. school, and then they can kind of cast humanity forward again. So it's kind of like interesting. So I just think that he's one of these people. And he's starting things that are going to shift the, you know, our existence. And that's why I just was like, I need to give this guy money.
Yeah. that's the ultimate support.
Totally. Like, yeah. It's just like, I just believe in this person so much that I just want to support them in their mission.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he's not really about the dollars and cents. And you kind of touched on that a little bit about your real estate business and your entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously you're talking about investment real estate for the most part, but what's your philosophy of your real estate business? What's the core value system behind it?
I think what's delivering customer service, delivering the best customer service, but also giving clients the best advice. I remember, you know, there's two things that really stick out to me, and one is helping families make a transition.
Mm.
So watching, you know, clients move their kids to a different school, to a different area,
right?
Helping them ease that transition, because we all know moving is stressful.
Right.
Helping them make that transition, you know, better, and watching their families grow. So I've had clients now for maybe, you know, 10 years, and I've seen their clients grow up, and now they're not babies anymore. They're 10 years old. The clients are moving. They're moving to, you know, secondary school or what have you. And just seeing that transition is so humbling. Mm-hmm. So I feel that's really important. And I feel on the investment side as well, helping clients make good decisions. And I've fallen out with clients before. I remember one time my client Kevin, hey Kevin, if you're listening, my client Kevin really wanted to buy a condo in this one building, and he's an investor. So he's a very dollars and cents guy.
Right.
And this is when the market was kind of, you know, increasing, and we actually fell out. We had a bit of an argument because he wanted to pay X amount, and I said, well, I don't think this condo is worth that. And we fell out because I said, look, you're not thinking about this from an investment perspective. You've become emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up not writing the offer. We didn't get it. We found him something else 2 weeks later, and he called me and he said, Adam, you know what? You were right. You talked me out of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, because I don't want one deal from you. That's not mm-hmm. what I want. I want you to become wealthy as well through real estate, and I want to see you grow that
mm-hmm.
over a relationship that we have for a lifetime. So I think those are the two main things. Does that make sense?
You know, I think holding that high like integrity and that high standard is unbelievable. Like, people do feel it. Like, you know, I don't know if you noticed, I don't know if you've seen any kind of salesperson, you know, any kind of person that's in, you know, you can kind of sense if they're just in it for the
transactional
versus
based.
Like, yeah, versus really, you know, working, you know, it's like, because I've just been doing this coaching thing. He talks about transactional, you know, business versus transformational business, which is, you know, when you're meeting with someone, you're kind of transforming where they're going to be living, how their mindset works towards retirement.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I've been really fortunate to meet a lot of wealthy people, and a large bulk of them have become wealthy through their real estate transactions,
right,
and investments. And, you know, like, without saying, like, you know, with my, even in my own experience with, you know, Oakland, being a realtor for many years, the best business decisions I've ever made have been to buy real estate.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the best thing I've ever done.
Absolutely.
And I truly believe in the vehicle that we, you know, that, and how that has classically helped people to secure their future, their mm-hmm. families in the future, has been like so transformational to many people. And, you know, there's this book by, it's like an old novel, it's called A Good Earth by Pearl Buck.
Okay.
And it's like this old book, like, and it talks about like these Chinese farmers and stuff like
okay.
that. And It goes way, way back. And if you look at the last like 1,000 and 2,000 years, landowners were always the most wealthy people. And that's who became dukes and duchesses.
Right.
And, you know, in England and so on and so forth in the feudal system. And so like, even though that feels very far away, I actually feel it's almost the same thing today. That if you're like, you know, if you own a lot of real estate, mm-hmm. if you own, you know, property, there, you know, there's an ability to be able to collect rents and cash flow it. And everyone kind of forgets in 25 years, these things get paid off.
For sure. Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
you know, if you do well in your business, you can stash it back into the mortgage there and, you know, and then you'll be paid off faster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always encourage my clients to do that. You know,
yeah.
say, hey, you know, yeah, I'm more focused on that. That's for me, that feels more like long-term wealth. And we can have debates and
stocks and bonds.
No, like, I have my friends that are in stocks and they're just like, you're crazy.
Right.
But like, you know, it's just classically what's worked really well for me. And,
yeah.
and I read that book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, when I was 16 as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it did impact me a lot.
But on a higher level as well, Michael, like just from the housing perspective, you know, if you own 20 doors, there's 20 people that are living in your buildings. Yes, they're helping you pay your mortgage, but you're also giving them a place to live.
Right.
Right? That's yeah. that's pretty humbling as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. And there's been a lot of, like, I had a really crummy landlord before when
yeah.
I was in university renting a little condo in Marpole.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, always breathing down my neck. Like, it was the weirdest. And he basically would come into my place whenever he felt like it.
Oh, boy.
And like, you know, just, he was just, like, it was crazy. And, like, you know, I think, but he owned the building and it was cheap, so I wanted to live there.
Yeah, yeah. So like, you make the sacrifice.
Yeah,
but
so just make the sacrifice.
Yeah.
But he would just pop into my place whenever he wanted.
Yeah.
And just to root around and make sure I wasn't up to anything.
No, that's not cool.
Yeah, it's
not,
crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of these nightmare stories. So, you know, Adam, we've talked to, you know, obviously about some different books and some mm-hmm. different parts of your business. What are some, like, let's say, for most of our listeners are realtors or
right.
they're people in business. What would be some of the three like defining points? Because Adam obviously run a successful business for several years now. What are some of your like top three like things that have helped you to you know just from getting started to like now starting to you know
right.
volume in your business?
Right. I think the main thing was this from the start, and we kind of touched on this at the beginning. And I think one of the biggest issues in real estate, in the real estate business we have in Vancouver and probably, you know, throughout North America is once you've done your license, you're just kind of thrown to the wolves, right?
Okay.
They teach you how to not go to real estate jail,
right.
teach you how to not get sued, but they don't teach you anything about sales. They don't teach you anything about, I mean, when I started, I didn't even know how to set up, how to book showings for a tour.
Right.
As when I joined that team, they told me, they were like, oh, Adam, your first job is to go and put a sign up at this, you know, for sale. So I'm getting in my car expecting to grab a shovel and like literally put up a sign, and they're all laughing at me like, you're an idiot. I'm like, well, I don't know. You don't know these things like, coming out of the gate. They don't
yeah.
teach you this. They just teach you how to not go to jail. So joining a team, partnering up with someone and learning how to sell,
right?
How to negotiate contracts, those kind of things I think was super important. So I say that was the first thing. Going out by myself, like learning how to acquire a new business was also a big eye opener for me. And I feel in today's world, we have so many ways, so many people selling you things on how to generate business and how to, you know, sign up for my website and sign up for this and pay $3,000 a month, you know, for this. I think defining how you're going to source your business is really important. So come up with a plan, whether that's, you know, geo farming, online leads like I did, whatever you want to do,
right.
Come up with a plan. And then I think the third thing is time management and scheduling. I think that's recently in the last year and a half, like we talked about, I think having a schedule, not running around after everybody else, you know, I want to meet you at 9 a.m. Well, sorry, I can't because that's my time for emails and that's my time for mm-hmm. calls. No one's gonna die if you don't get back to somebody right away. Take control of your schedule.
Mm.
Don't run around like an idiot trying to please everybody.
Those are really, really great lessons. So like, we can just recap. So
sure.
Just getting started, joining a team. I'm gonna go over each of these just in a list and then we'll kind of dig into each one. So
sure.
One was joining a team. Two was like understanding the source of your business and what's kind of the profit centers
mm-hmm.
of your business. And also third was to, you know, manage your schedule, manage your time effectively. So Talking about the team.
Yes.
Was that something that they came to you with, or did you approach teams with?
No, I was looking for a job on Craigslist.
Okay.
Which is a whole other story. But yeah, I found a position as an assistant for a team.
Right.
And that's how I got in that way. And I thought, you know, I can get paid, what is it, $15 an hour while I learn this stuff and do my license. So that was kind of, it was double bonus for me. So I got, you know, have some income, at least I could afford to get to work and eat, and also learn from, you know, some top producers. So that was really important.
Which team were you on?
I was at a team that was at a Remax in on Kingsway.
Sure.
It's not a team anymore.
Yeah. Okay. But it was a top producing team.
Yeah, we did pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny that, you know, it just depends. A lot of teams in real estate come together and dissolve, and, you know, it happens. You know.
Why do you think that is?
You know, I think mostly, personally, I think for the most part, the number one reason is ego.
Yeah.
You know, people, ego, like, you know, if we can get into psychology, but sure. Ego is the, you know, ego is the killer of all teams. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the biggest blocks that people have in their minds and in their personality. Everyone has them.
Yeah.
So I think for the most part, it's emotion and ego that's one thing. And sometimes it's just not the right logical fit.
Mm-hmm.
And people realize it's not the right logical fit. But those are kind of the top two that I always see.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, lack of planning so that everyone's on the same page. Because I think when you're working in a team, it's just like family. Like, if, you know, your parents have to have the same goals and destinations and plans for their children. If they're off,
right,
then there's going to be conflict.
Lack of synergy and more conflict. Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be issues, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you gotta just understand who you are as an individual as well, and not just be swayed in one direction or the other, which is something that happens a lot. So obviously getting started as a team.
Yes.
You know, and being an assistant for the first 3 years of your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about a year and a half actually as assistant till I got licensed, yeah.
Okay, so a year and a half, and then you got licensed, and then did you go on your own right after you got licensed?
No, so I was
staying on.
Yeah, I was with the team for 2 years, maybe two and a half years.
Yeah.
So that was good, you know, in terms of shadowing other top producing agents, learning how to close, learning how to sell, negotiating contracts, everything like that just made me a much better agent, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And then obviously then you branched on your own.
Correct.
Yeah. So how was that? So, you know, obviously having that good foundation working, you know, was it really organized, or did you have to come up with a lot of the systems on your own, or was it really organized when you got in?
The team?
Yeah.
The team was very organized. Yeah, we had a lot of structure, which was good. And a lot of the stuff that, you know, I'm kind of coming back to now in terms of time management was kind of impressed upon us, which was great. Going out by myself was tough, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people listening can relate to that. Like, your first few years are just, you know, you've got no clients. You feel like you're spinning your wheels. You're trying all these different things in terms of generating business. So, you know, the first few years were pretty tough. Like, I made almost no money.
Right.
Or, like, you know, in real estate, if you're making a certain amount, you're just covering your expenses, right? If that. So the first couple of years was tough until you start to, you know, generate those past clients and things like that. So yeah, the first couple of years was pretty brutal.
Right. So then when did your business start really taking off then?
I think probably 2013.
Right.
Yeah. Once I'd got that.
For 5 years then.
Yeah. I mean, it took a while.
Yeah.
But probably because I wasn't very disciplined, right, with my approach in terms of my schedule and what I was doing. I was kind of just flailing around and whatnot. And I was a lot younger then too, so a lot more distractions.
Yeah, totally.
But probably till about 2013 when it started getting going. Yeah.
What was the most distracting thing for you?
I don't think we could talk about it. I when you're young, I think just going out and, you know, just being a youngster and enjoying Vancouver, moving to Vancouver from England, I was like all goggly eyed with the scenery. So that was right. Yes, lovely mountains. Yeah, it's a beautiful view. So.
So the second thing you mentioned was, you know, to understand the source of your business. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that a primary source of your business is online leads.
Right.
So maybe you can share a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I broke out by myself in 2011, that was kind of the time when IDX websites weren't that popular and all that kind of stuff. So I built an IDX website, a fully custom one. That's my geeky computer background. But built a fully custom IDX website that performed really well for about 3 to 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And essentially a lot of my past clients that I have now were from that, from that website. Nowadays, everybody's got a website. Everyone's running Google ads. Everyone's doing Facebook ads. So I feel it's kind of diluted. So I think the proposition of having that is less.
Right.
But back in the day, that was my main source. Mm-hmm. So now it's my business is probably 75% all from past client referrals.
Right.
From those clients that I built up using that online lead gen stuff. Yeah. So now I guess the challenge moving forward and in terms of identifying where your business is coming from is how can I add more business? And me and you, Michael, we've talked about this at lunch a little bit, but how can I add other spheres into that, right? To generate more business and take things to the next level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's classically, how a lot of people get started, either it's online leads or like a cold variety of prospecting, especially out of not having a big network.
Yes.
I mean, not being born and raised here in the city. We've talked to a couple other agents, Thomas and a few others, that don't have any network here. They came here I don't want to say fresh off a boat.
But no, but it's true, literally, literally.
And so they don't have this ingrained network
that
they can rely upon right out of the bat. To feed them business, so they just have to go out and do cold business.
100%.
Obviously getting started online leads and relying on a strength, having that background in computer science and being able to design your own site, now that's like an amazing skill that I certainly don't have. So it's a good way to kind of get started from there. But it's very common, I've done, casual polling with top 1% agents in Vancouver, and also a lot of the top 10% agents in Vancouver. And without a shadow of a doubt, the number one source of everyone's business is referral and repeat.
Right.
There's very, very few that just stick to that online system mm-hmm. and forever remain there. So for the most part, that's really the genesis of it.
But you have to start somewhere. You can't just pop up with a bunch of past clients.
Right.
So it's like, how do you, as a new agent, how do you, for me, it was online leads, and that might work for some people for a certain extent, but how do you build that now? A lot of people doing open houses in the office, and things like that. So it's like, how do you figure that out, right?
Yeah. So I think it's always relying on your strength, and you came from that, you had a competitive advantage coming from that environment where, you were in school for computer science, you mm-hmm. designed this beautiful site that is very original at the time, and so on and so forth. And you can still actually focus on that as a primary source if you just think a little bit what's the next evolution.
Next iteration of it, yeah.
Iteration, because mm-hmm. you actually had the next iteration and you kind of predicted the trend of where mm-hmm. it was going, and then
That's a good point.
That's where you landed a lot of bulk of your business. And so I think it's kind of knowing what your strength is. And so, knowing yourself is a big part of being successful in business, being really, the word authenticity is used a lot. It actually kind of annoys me. But knowing yourself really well and your skill set really, really well. So, I remember when I first started, I wasn't the most eloquent speaker. I didn't have a big network or anything like that. But I knew that, it's weird, this is a weird way of thinking.
Let's get weird.
I knew I could take a lot of pain.
Okay, yeah.
I knew I could take...
Rejection?
A lot of rejection. Because for a variety of different reasons, some things look in the mountains and all those other things. Mm-hmm. I never got a chance to look in the mountains. Right.
if you don't understand what we're talking about, you can text me and I will fill you in.
Sure. I just got because I just have this, and even when I was working for other people, I just have this ability to people can say no to me, and that's okay with me, and I can kind of maybe have a short-term memory like a goldfish. I just move on, and so I knew that of myself. So when I really thought about it, I'm like, okay, I can do door knocking, I can do cold calling.
That's amazing.
I can do expired listings and for sale by owners because I don't mind if someone says no. And so, I tried to change it in my mind as it being fun instead of being arduous.
Right.
When you're designing your site, you're probably having fun designing your site, thinking about, oh, how is this going to work? How is this going to you know, how is this going to affect the amount of lead gen that comes through here? And you're probably having a good time doing it. And I try to have a good time, you know, meeting people for for sale by owners. Some of my best clients right now are my old for sale by owners.
That's phenomenal.
That I met, you know, in 2006 when I first started in real estate. And they're still my great clients. I've seen their, like you were mentioning, I've seen like Natalia grow like as a baby.
Right.
And now she's like 14 years old.
Yeah.
And she's like in high school and they're like, you know, we're going to buy a condo for Natalia now.
Wow.
I'm like, wow, what a great story. And so, you know, there's some really, so just, I think knowing yourself is a big key. And so trying to understand the source of your business, especially when you're branching on your own, just getting to know yourself and then using those resources and just going with
right.
and sticking to it.
But just to speak to rejection, Michael, that's phenomenal that you're able to deal with it that way, because I struggle hugely with rejection, you know, in terms of business. And I find that agents like myself, and I'm sure a lot of you out there can relate, we choose the path of least resistance, right? We'll do an open house because we can just sit there, rather than go door knocking and have people slam the door in our face because it's easier, right? It might not be as productive, but we choose that path of least resistance. So if you can overcome that, which is something I'm working on at the moment in terms of dealing with that better and not taking it personally, that's phenomenal. So hats off to you.
You know, I think for the most part, it's everyone's a little bit different, but you know, it's trying to take the emotion out of the business and just doing your job.
Yes.
You know, it's like after this podcast, I'll be calling this potential seller, and this will be the 10th time I've called them in 15 days.
Right, right.
Like that. And because it's part of like my plan once I meet with somebody and so on and so forth, and how we follow up. And I just kind of take the emotion away from it instead of I just like, this is just part of my job. And it was a sales coach I had that talked about separating your individual, like from who you are. So that's Adam as a person versus your role, Adam the realtor.
Right.
So he's like, you got to separate that because, you know, it's a 90% failure ratio in your business. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people are going to say no all the time. So you have to not let that emotionally affect other parts of your life.
Right.
Because it was for a little while. But it really helped to segment and separate that.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, you're just doing your job. You're like, you know, I'm just doing my, like, even when I was cold calling, you're like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
You're like, how'd you get my number? You're a dirty rat.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm just doing my job. I really appreciate taking the time, and I'll take you off the list, and I'm sorry to bother you.
Yeah. But, and what's, like, at the end of the day, what's really the worst that could happen?
That's
like, they're not going to come over and beat you up. Well, they might do, but like, they're going to tell you to F off. And like, if that's the worst thing that can happen, I mean, really, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And like, it's funny because that has helped me, and I apply this to many, many parts of my life. Like, many of you guys have seen my girlfriend now. Like, it's a result of all the failures.
The ultimate prospecting.
Yeah, someone actually said yes.
Come on now.
And so, understanding the source of business is huge. And obviously the time management that we touched on here that we're just really honing in on. So you mentioned that. So do you do a time block system? Is it in a calendar, like a digital calendar?
Yeah, absolutely. So my morning, up until noon, it's all scheduled. So everything's done by like 30-minute intervals. So it'll be like role play in the morning, calling, emails, take a break through some emails and that kind of stuff. So up until noon, everything's scheduled. And then the afternoon, it's a bit more fluid in terms of appointments and going out and meeting the people. So everything in the morning's very rigid. Yeah.
That's so good. And, you know, I have some friends that are hyper diligent with like every minute of their day, maybe they're OCD or something, I don't know. But I was emailing one of my friends that's, he's a lawyer consultant, one of these kind of guys. And I sent him an email and I got an automatic reply back, and it said that Chris will only return emails between 12 and 1 and 3 and 4.
That's amazing.
And so like, I sent him the email at like 7 o'clock.
Right.
And so like in the morning. And he knew that, and I was just like, oh, that's really interesting. And like, and I think he just bangs them all out at one time. Like,
right.
This is one of the wealthiest guys I know. He's like so efficient. He's just like, everything is about efficiency. And it's just like really dialed in. And so, you know, I thought that was kind of cool. It was really disciplined. Even like with his daughters, he's like super disciplined too.
Right.
He's like, you know, he actually goes to the, he goes to the gym I go to, and he basically like brings his daughters to the gym so he can spend time with
Right.
them. It's pretty like, you know,
that's your daughter time and,
yeah,
and
exactly.
hangout.
Yeah,
so, are you going to start implementing that, Michael, the auto reply?
I don't know, because I'm like, you know, how to put this? Admittedly, I really enjoy my work, and I really like, it's like a bit gaudy to say, but like, I don't think I've worked, you know, for, especially over the last 6 or 7 years of my business, it's just been a joy.
It doesn't feel like work.
It not even doesn't feel like work. It's just fun.
Yeah.
Like, you know, coming in every day, seeing our awesome staff and meeting like my friends, like it's like I'm hanging out with my friends at the office, and we're doing, we're growing together. We're like doing things, you know, we're able to help, you know, people with their business, but not just that, but, you know, just get to know them and find out so many awesome things. And I get to look back on, you know, my own life and be like, you know what? Adam spoke so positively about my dad, or about his dad, but maybe I don't speak that positive about my own. And so I'm like, you know, that's something that I can reflect on.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh, and I'll probably think about that tonight, you know, when, after we're all done. And, you know, and I get an opportunity to, you know, see a lot of things from a lot of different perspectives. And so I really enjoy it. So I don't really care as much about efficiency.
That's fair.
So it's a little bit hard for, you know, because I'm not really a traditional person. Like, I don't believe in a 9-to-5. I don't believe in, you know, I just believe in just living.
Right.
For the most part. And, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And it's all going to, I can only control the 3 feet in front of my nose. And that's about it.
Sure.
Let it happen how it's supposed to happen. And, you know, it's pretty, that's like pretty much the, like the end all be all for me in a sense. So, you know, I don't really let things bother me outside of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Control what you can control and everything else will fall into place.
Well, you know, that's all you can really do, right? And, you know, everything is incremental. So every small micro decision you're making that's advancing, even if it's just advancing it like 1 millimeter, that's still a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, and even like making those calls that you make every morning to your past clients or to your, you know, that's still something.
Right.
You know, and that's better than just sitting around like twiddling your thumbs or looking out in the mountains or whatever.
For sure. And I think that's one thing we struggle with. You know, there's a lot of, you know, obviously we all consume a huge amount of social media and goal setting and all that kind of good stuff. And there's all, you know, there's such a focus on the end, right? Like the, you got to have the yacht, you got to have the, you know, the plane, you got to have all this. And I know I struggle with this, is getting caught up too much with the destination and not, like you said, enjoying the incremental journey and like focusing on, well, what did I do better than yesterday? Well, I made 10 calls instead of 8. I talked to someone, you know, I touched, you know, I helped 2 people move today rather than, you know, those kind of incremental changes. Whereas I think we get too caught up in the end goal. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the best type of gratification is delayed. You know, it's that journey that you go through. Like, you know, if you get to eat cake every day, it doesn't taste good anymore. So like, that is my a part of it as well. And so, yeah, and everyone has different philosophies on social media. I think it's really helped our business.
Sure.
You know, Oakland, for sure. You know, the social media, you know, and how that, you know, but I think it has some real, like, it's very conflicting. And, you know, it's very, very conflicting. And I think, you know, with the rise of artificial intelligence and everything that's kind of happening, it's just really interesting to see what's going to be the next evolution of it.
Right.
You know, there's all these crazy books and stuff like that about, you know, a hive mind, or about a, like, new consciousness, or, like, a man-machine blend.
Yeah.
There's, like, an interesting podcast with Elon Musk and Joe Rogan. Did
okay.
you ever read that one? That's the one he smoked up in.
The Joe Rogan one I've heard is really good, yeah.
So he interviews Elon Musk, and he said that like, I learned so much from this podcast. I watched it about 3 or 4 times. I watched another video. I listened to it in the car a few times. And
okay.
I just tried to, like, take as many little points away from it. And one thing that Elon Musk talked about is that it talks about optimism, in a sense. And you have to, like, almost shoot for the optimistic outcome.
Of course.
And he thinks the most optimistic outcome, because man hasn't put too much restrictions around artificial intelligence,
mm-hmm.
is that the best case scenario for mankind is that man and machine will mold together as like one, but the most likely scenario is that machine will take over man.
Interesting.
And like what man creates is what's going to be his demise, because they won't need us anymore.
Right, right.
So the best thing would be for us to combine with machine now.
Yeah.
And that's why you're seeing like wearable technology. So this kind of stuff is that we're hoping, like, that's the best thing that mankind can actually do right now, is like actually make friends with the machine.
Harness the power, yeah.
Well, I think there's all these different philosophies that like machine will actually think of us like pets.
Right.
Versus, you know, like we look like a dog. Like, yeah. they're gonna infinitely more intelligent, and have more knowledge and be able to predict things that we can't,
mm-hmm.
Because of algorithms. And how, like, so it's, there's some crazy stuff. Like, if you're into these weird forums that I'm into.
I'll check that out. That sounds good. I'll listen to that.
It's pretty, like, mind-bending, because they think, like, for example, you know, the government is, you know, it's obviously a tool to help people with healthcare, education, all the rest of it, to baseline stuff. They, you know, they're thinking that there will never be like a natural election anymore. It's all going to be based on algorithms.
Right.
So everyone's going to be every new governor, mayor, president will be predetermined on algorithm. So the most likely person that wins based on all these algorithms and vote, like these patterns and how people's opinions are,
mm-hmm.
is that this, like Adam Schall is the perfect candidate, because he's because he's like a mixed, blended, cultural person that has an English accent,
right. Right.
has a soothing voice, that likes to look out in the mountains, and then, like, drives up the forest, but he's still like a real cool, that's like who everyone wants to vote for, so it's going to be Adam.
Right. It's already that's your life's destiny.
Yeah,
and
it's just everything will be kind of in this predicted mode.
Interesting.
Based on, you know, and it's getting really deep. But there's a lot of cool stuff with technology. I think 3D printing is really cool. I think 3D printing, and once they get 3D printing in the healthcare system.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know if I mentioned this on a pod. People think that they're going to be in the next, you know, few, like next, even maybe in our lifetime, people will be able to live for like 250-300 years, because you'll be able to 3D print
like a heart valve or something, or like
your entire heart,
right?
Like your whole heart or your whole liver. They'll be able to print it, put like a kind of a skin on it,
mm-hmm.
that is from your own DNA. So it'll work as well as your healthy liver did.
So your body's not going to reject it?
Body won't reject it, because, you know, you get a transplant, it is possible
sure.
to reject it, because it's not your own DNA. It could get rejected. But kidneys, like, they're working on 3D technology to even print bones. So, like, let's say your spine has a curvature in it. Well, we can print the bones in your spine that were, like, perfectly aligned when you were 20 years old. And then all you're doing is just stretching your skin. Because all, like, we're being just regenerated all the time.
For sure.
Like within our bodies, we're just an entire universe of cells.
Mm-hmm.
Like a cellular organism. So it's just like this, you know, that there's a really interesting guy. He's a trans scientist. Martin Rothblatt, which is like, he's a super fascinating guy he was a satellite engineer, an entrepreneur, and now he's into like medical healthcare technology. It's mind-blowing stuff. Like
that's super exciting.
Yeah, there's just some like, so we're in a really exciting time, because we're like, there's a lot of like, I don't know, maybe I'm into the weird stuff of life, but like, you know, we're on the cusp of like man and machine combining, and so like this is the most lively and interesting terrain and environment that I think humanity has ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
And Like, it's like we're right in the Industrial Revolution. Like, we're like right in the midst of the Agricultural Revolution, Industrial Revolution, Renaissance. Like, we're in it right now.
The next uptick.
Yeah.
The next,
like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, you look at the history, like, there's like, you know, the Renaissance, which is just like crazy, like, amounts of art being pushed in this certain time. Like, man is making beautiful things because they were able to have the Agricultural Revolution, mm-hmm. which was like, man didn't have to worry about survival and food anymore. They changed from hunter-gatherer to settled people. And now we're into this next thing where we're getting not biological, but getting technological and, like, using our minds only. So, like, it's pretty, yeah. And there's some really, like, insane stuff. And, you know, I think we can talk about this forever. It's been over an hour.
We can do another one. We can do another one just on Michael's love of Elon Musk.
Stuff.
We should just do an Elon Musk podcast. That can be the next one. And the technological revolution. I like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff. But, Adam, maybe if we can just, like, finish on a, you know, real professional note.
Sure.
Let's talk about one of, like, the big difference maker in your business that, you know, if you were to say, okay, one thing to take away, like your dad gave you those three tips, Mandarin, domain reservation, which you didn't say, like, someone getting started in real estate, that just one thing, what would it be?
I think for me, the biggest thing, and it's not necessarily a real estate thing, but it's just the way that I live my life, is the people that I interact with, Michael, I want those people to have an interaction with me and leave feeling better about their day or better about themselves than when they met me. That's super important to me. So everybody that I meet, doesn't matter who it is, even if it's a really quick interaction, maybe a cashier or something like that, I want that person to feel better about their day, to feel better about their life, but better about themselves. You know, if they're having the worst day in the world, they'd be like, oh, that guy was nice. Like, he, you know, we had a little chat. That's what I want. So I try and, everybody that I meet, I try and instill that as I go forward. So that's kind of that's something that I think about every day and with everybody that I meet. So it's not necessarily a professional thing, but just in general, you can tie that to your work as well, but that's kind of my mantra.
You know, if everyone did that and everyone had that philosophy, Adam, like, we'd be on heaven on earth.
Right.
I think, like, you know, that's a great way to end the podcast. I think hopefully all you listeners for the rest of the day or the rest of the month or the rest of the year or the rest of your lives do the same thing as Adam. Which is incrementally help other people that you're interacting with every single day and being really mindful of having a positive impact and positive change in others' lives. And I think that that is such a noble and awesome way to finish. So I'm just so happy that you've listened to us. And thank you, Adam, for being part of the pod.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
So I know I say this every pod, but for those of you that would like to, please rate this podcast 5 out of 5 and write a little review. And if you loved Adam's podcast, what's the best way that we can get a hold of you, Adam?
You can get a hold of me on Instagram. It's Adam Chahal, AdamChahal. I'm always on there. So, yeah, hit me up if you've got any questions or anything like that.
Get into his DMs. Talk about mountains, scenery, ocean, all that stuff. And so until next time, thank you guys so much for listening. That was great.
Thanks, Michael.
Awesome.